genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday, here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme in the second hour is more than one way to look at something. Each of my guests will show us that there's more than one way to view their particular subject. My first guest looks at one of the country's most influential men during his time to show that he was more than just a satirist. We'll look at the political muscle Will Rogers exerted during his lifetime from his book, Will Rogers, A Political Life. My second guest examines how and why we argue. She presents that there's more than one way to view any disagreement. We'll examine her life-changing tactics for reaching an agreement from her book, The Triangle of Truth. My third guest is a futurist who turns his predictive powers on the subject of sports. He defines two types of sports we Americans engage in. One is top-down sports, and the other is bottom-up. He'll provide the different way of looking at sports from his white paper titled Two Sports. And if you have a question or you want to talk to one of my guests, you can always call us at 639-0008. Richard D. White Jr. is a professor of public administration and an associate dean at Louisiana State University. Richard is a former senior officer in the U.S. Coast Guard and an icebreaker captain. He received his Ph.D. from Penn State University, his MBA from Purdue University, and his bachelor's from Old Dominion College. His latest book, as I said, is titled Will Rogers, A Political Life. Richard lives in Baton Rouge and joining us from steamy Baton Rouge. Hi, Richard. How are you today?
Good, Bill.
Good. Thank you so much for being my guest today. It's a subject that is intriguing to me because Will Rogers today is probably not as well known as he was maybe 20, 30 years ago, but he is certainly an influential person in his time. He was a top box office attraction. He was one of the most widely read newspaper columnists in America for the time. He was a public speaker, and he was a radio commentator, just like me, only had a little bit bigger audience, 60 million listeners coast to coast for the Will Rogers Show. I mean, it's just amazing. So give us a brief biography, if you will, of Will Rogers and some of the things that led up to his great political muscle that he started to exercise.
Well, he's from Oklahoma. He's part Cherokee. He only had an eighth grade education, and he got in business, in show business, as a rope twirler. He went around the world right after he dropped out of school and started performing. He never intended on being a humorist. During his rope tricks, he would often interject some humorous comments, and he found that the audience started to enjoy the humorous comments more than the rope tricks. So over time, the rope disappeared. He became a humorist, and he started talking about politics. He found that he could always keep his routine fresh just by reading what was in the paper every morning. And he expanded his audience and very quickly rose to the top of the entertainment world.
Without a doubt, he was a superstar within his time. Now, just to set the stage, that was about 100 years ago that he began that. So he's known today as an intellectual man with a humble touch, and yet he had no more than an eighth grade education. So how did he develop his keen intellect, Richard?
Well, he was a brilliant man. He was quick. He loved people. He had a photographic memory. He also was well-read. He didn't like to admit it, but, I mean, he read Shakespeare. He quoted from the Bible. Everywhere he went, he had four or five newspapers under his arm. So he was in tune. You know, formal education, as we know, is not, you know, the end-all of someone's brilliance. Now, a lot of the intellectuals of the time really discounted him, and I think some of it was they discounted him because of his lack of education. There was some racial bias because of his Indian heritage. But when you talk to people who really knew him, like H.L. Mencken, and Bernard Baruch, Henry Ford, Carl Sandburg, they all saw through that, and they all admitted that Will Rogers was a genius.
Now, there you go. My guest is Richard White. He's a professor at LSU, talking down education in general. But interestingly enough, though, you do bring up Will Rogers is probably one of the greatest humorists of his time. Had a huge audience, bigger than we can imagine in today's fractured world of media. But I want you to do a little compare and contrast, if you will, please. In what ways is Will Rogers different from some of the satirists that we see today? And I'm going to use two examples from the Comedy Channel, Jon Stewart of The Daily Show and Stephen Colbert of The Colbert Report.
There's a difference there. Will's humor was very different. He was very careful not to attack people personally. And I think the humor today has a much more personal edge to it. The person, I think, who says a lot of the things that Will said and that really is on the same train with him is, you'll be surprised, but it's Lewis Black.
Really?
If you take away Lewis Black's F words, you'll find that he's pretty much of the same critique. I was listening to Lewis Black the other day, and he said, when we go to the polls and choose between parties, we choose between a party that has no ideas versus a party that has bad ideas. And that could have been used by Will Rogers, because Will said, for example, the only one party is worse than the other. He always was berating both parties, much like Lewis Black does.
It's interesting that you should bring up Lewis Black, and I don't know if you knew this going into the interview or not, Richard, but Lewis Black is going to be in town performing in Thousand Oaks this week. So what an interesting plug and an unintentional one, it sounds like,
right,
from your laughter.
But,
yeah, Black is going to be here in town, so that is great. But again,
if you cut through the F words, you'll see a serious message. And that's what led me to this book. I cut through the humor. I stripped off the humor of Will Rogers and looked at what he was saying, who he was saying it to, and where he was going, and I found out I had a very serious book about a very humorous man.
Without a doubt. I'm talking to the author, Richard White. He's a professor at LSU, and he's author of the book, Will Rogers, A Political Life. Now, Will Rogers is well known for his quote, "I never met a man I didn't like." So what invited him to the seats of power? Was he there because he was so amiable, or in spite of the fact he was so amiable?
I think that got him in the door, and he meant that. He meant he never met a man he didn't like, an individual he didn't like. But he was also very mistrustful of men in organizations. He distrusted government, big government. He distrusted big business. When Teapot Dome and the Black Sox scandal took place, he deplored both scandals, but he forgave the individuals involved. So it was kind of a paradox.
That is paradoxical. And it's that populist belief that is also paradoxical because, you know, that almost sounds like he was pandering to his audience of the time. Because remember, he was there during the Roaring Twenties and then the Great Depression mm-hmm. as well. And during the Great Depression, it was very popular to go against big business, to go against big government, to go against big anything. How much of that was he parroting the times and how much of that was his true belief, Richard?
Well, I think he was pretty honest. In fact, I would say that he's probably the most trusted man in America during those 20 years that he was active. But he wasn't an iconoclast. He wasn't a reformist. He feared chaos. So he was not out there to tear down either individuals in government or business or the structures. He believed in the United States. He believed in democracy. But when there were problems with it, he attacked something that he was against. He was one of the strongest opponents of prohibition. He didn't drink hardly at all himself, but he felt government had no right to tell us what and when we could drink. And probably more than anybody else, I think he convinced the American people to favor a repeal of prohibition.
Very interesting. I did not know that. My guest is Richard White, author of the book Will Rogers, A Political Life. Now, you assert, Richard, that Will Rogers has no equivalent today in terms of his influence, both his influence in politics and among ordinary people. Explain what you mean.
Well, if Will Rogers showed up at the White House, he didn't need an appointment. Or in the Senate cloakroom, he was asked to testify many times. By 1925, five of his speeches had been entered in the congressional record. If he told people to write their congressman, Washington would be flooded with a million letters. The only analog today of anybody with that type of influence who is in entertainment, again, it's a surprising one to most people, but when you think seriously about it, I hope you will agree, and that's Oprah Winfrey. Oprah could show up at the White House and get entree. If she had a big issue that she crusaded for or against, it would make a difference. She has that kind of strength with the media, and she has that kind of trust with a very large proportion of the American public.
Which I find that's an interesting analogy, and I like the analogy between Will Rogers and Oprah Winfrey, but I find Oprah Winfrey even more remarkable, and here's why. In Will Rogers' time, it was a simpler, kinder, gentler time. I mean, there were only a few national radio networks. There were no TV networks to speak of, hundreds of newspapers, but the newspapers were owned by conglomerates like Hearst and everything else. There was no Internet. I mean, so with the proliferation of media, the Internet, the diversity of the audience that we have in the United States, do you find that Oprah Winfrey is more or less remarkable than Will Rogers?
I would have to agree with you that she's more remarkable. I can't explain her ascent against the barriers she was against years ago, and how remarkable her career and her influence has been. Again, I can't explain it. With Will, he had some talents. He was able to adjust to the media. He was very energetic and ambitious. Oprah is so unique. It's hard to compare her to anyone, and it's hard to create a model for her success.
That it is, and many people have tried, but nobody yet has succeeded, that's for sure. My guest is Richard White. We're talking about Will Rogers. Now, you mentioned Oprah. Oprah went to Africa, and that was her big foreign for schools in Africa and that kind of stuff. But interesting, Will Rogers had his own diplomacy tour, if you will, to Manchuria. Tell us about Will Rogers' Manchurian incursion, if you will.
Well, that's how I start the book. In 1931, Will arrives in Manchuria, right after the Japanese had invaded there. It was in the dead of winter. It was 40 below zero. It's snowing. No one speaks English. And the question you have is, what the hell is Will Rogers doing in Manchuria?
Yeah.
Well, he went there as the guest of the Secretary of War, who was a friend of his from Oklahoma. And they wanted some more eyes on the ground. They wanted somebody they could trust who traveled a lot. Will ran around the world four times. He'd met kings and queens and haberdashers in all corners of the world. So he had a great sense of international affairs. And so he went to Manchuria. And the fear was that the Japanese were looking at the Philippines. And he wanted to get a gauge on their intentions, how bloodthirsty they were. And when he finished that trip, he went on around the world. His first stop in Washington was at the White House.
Interesting. So he became a de facto statesman, if you will, and part spy, too.
Well, I wouldn't put the spy on it. In fact, I spent a week in Washington going through War Department records just to confirm that he was not a spy, that there was not a file on any reports on him. He was just a trusted set of open eyes and open ears.
That That is true. We're talking about Will Rogers. We're talking with the author, Richard White, of the book Will Rogers, A Political Life. And Richard, earlier you commented on the fact that Will Rogers was different because he did not attack people personally, and I thought that was a good observation. In what way is Rogers different from internet pundits and talk show hosts of today? One of the ways I found by reading your book was that he was more of a moderating influence in the public debate. Even though he was a Democrat, you know, he didn't care. He went after both parties equally. What lessons could Will Rogers teach modern political pundits and talk show hosts today if he were alive?
Well, we need that moderating influence so bad. Will was not politically correct. He said what was completely on his mind and what was honest. There were no real sound bites there. What you saw was what you get. So the trust factor was really up there. Today, you know, you have such polarized media that even if you agree with what they're saying, you don't trust it because you know it's biased. With Will, you didn't have that pitfall. You didn't have that trap.
And that is a good quality to have, especially if you're in the public eye, as Will Rogers was. Richard, what do you want readers to take away from reading Will Rogers, A Political Life?
Wow. The trust, the honesty, looking out for all the people, a high sense of moral values. His sense of morality was really came through in everything he did. He made mistakes. He had some foibles. But, again, what you saw was what you got. And our political system kills people off for that. Any sort of honesty in the system is going to get you in trouble these days. And, I'm not faulting individual politicians. It's a very systemic cultural problem that we need to overcome, and it will take some very talented, broad-thinking, courageous men to overcome that. And unfortunately, I don't see them around.
Well, as we go into the presidential election season of 2012, certainly those are things to consider as we go into the polls. We have been talking to Dr. Richard White. He's the author of the book Will Rogers, A Political Life. Richard, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Go to Texas Tech University Press, TTUP. They're the publisher of the book. Barnes & Noble has it. Amazon has it, but I'd prefer you go through Texas Tech and order it directly from them. They're a university press, and they're struggling like most universities are right now.
All right, that's
and they did a super job in pushing this book out.
And that's TTUP.com. Richard, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, it was my pleasure, Billy.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.